Welcome to another episode of At the Table with Patrick Lencioni, where everything we talk about is related to changing the world of work so that more organizations can be more effective and less dysfunctional, and employees can be more fulfilled and less miserable. I'm your host, Pat Lencioni, joined by my friends, Cody Thompson. Hello, Cody. How are you today?
I am a little jealous. You guys have been hanging out for a couple of days and and having a good time, and I've been here in my home office, so it's good to see you. But wish I could have been with you guys in person.
We just came back from a conference, which we're going to talk about today because it brings up our topic. So Tracy and I were there. How are you, Tracy?
I'm great. I'm feeling energized today.
That's great. And you have a new role where you're just going to keep us on track, no pressure.
Yes, I love it.
Leaning into your working genius. We've also got Matt and Karen here just to send us information about how we're doing. And Matt's doing well. How are you doing, Karen? Thumbs up. Yeah, awesome. Okay, so today, what's our topic, Cody?
Blowing up performance management.
Yeah, blowing up performance management. And I am so excited to blow up performance management. I've been hearing this topic for years in my career, and it's so wonky, and nobody quite knows what it is. And I think the fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh letters of performance is what we think performance management is, and that's filling out forms. And this is a real problem in our organization. So we're going to talk about that. But here's how this topic came about. So Karen and Tracy and I were at a conference for the last 3 days where we were working with pastors and their leadership teams. And we were working with them on very practical issues, spiritual issues, all these different things, but we were really helping them like how to run a better parish, which as it turns out, if you don't know, that is like most other organizations. I mean, it's so many of the same challenges. So I was doing a section with them on what we call discipline number four, which is how to reinforce your culture. And the four kind of ways we reinforce our culture, or four of the many ways, is how we hire people, how we reward them and give them recognition, how we do performance management, and how we fire them or let them go. And so I started off with this talk to all these pastors and their leadership team members about how they needed to learn how to let people go better because churches are notorious for keeping people for way too long. They don't think they're allowed to let people go. They hire people just to work around people. And they all agreed that. And I said, so I think that's what we need to talk about. And I said, let's vote. What's your number one topic? And they almost all voted for. None of them voted for what I thought. They voted for performance management. And they were right in that we had to do that. Because what I realized is they didn't do performance management, which is why they don't know how to let people go. So they said, no, Pat, start with that. I said, okay. And I realized that they thought they were about to talk about legal issues and HR and filling out forms and measuring performance so that they could document people's performance and avoid the nastiness or the fear of letting someone go. And what we're going to talk about today is why performance management is so important, and when we don't do it, why it makes it impossible to productively and in a dignified way move people out of an organization.
I think this topic's super interesting because I think if you had written the words, you know, firing up there, they might have gone right to like, okay, tell us how to fire people. And this is what we're talking about. It's like you have to do this part, not the form part of this, but the performance management part of this to even get to that space. I think the giving people these tools or this sort of not even a rebrand, but like blowing up what people think this is and rebuilding the right parts of it is super usable in any organization.
Yeah. You know, Cody, we were all talking beforehand about this topic and in preparing for today. And I said, you know, it would be like being on a marathon and you're standing there before the marathon starts and you're like 20 minutes before it starts and somebody comes up to me and says, hey, give me some advice about running this marathon. What kind of tactics, what should I do? The first thing you'd say is, well, it kind of depends. I'm like, what have you been doing for the last year? I mean, not very much, but now it's about to start. Like, should I go out fast? Should I duck behind other people? I guess my advice would be, it doesn't matter. It's going to be miserable. You're going to fail and you're going to wish you hadn't done this. And that's like when people come up and they say, hey, I need to let this person go. I think they're driving me crazy. What should I do? And then we try to give them advice. And the answer is, well, what have you been doing for the past year? And if we don't do that well, there is no good way to let someone go that's either going to protect you as an organization, dignify them, and send the right message to your organization. So that's what we're going to talk about is what do you have to do in the year leading up to the marathon so that we know we're really prepared? Because running a marathon is probably great, but not if you're not prepared. So what is performance management? Well, it all starts, of course, it comes down to clarity and courage. It starts with hiring, though. You know, if you don't bring people into your organization. The first bit of performance management starts before they even join your organization. When in the interviews, you say, well, if we're going to bring you on, this is what we're looking for. This is what our culture is about. This is what we do. This is why we care about our customers or whatever we, our mission. And if you like that and you fit that, you should be okay. But if we're generic in how we do that, and so many organizations, God bless them, they still are, you know, they're like, you're breathing, you're available, and especially in this economy, and I need somebody, come on board. You're missing the first stage of performance management, which is really about setting really, really clear expectations so that people know what they're getting into. Does that make sense?
I love that. The idea that designing or getting people on board with the clarity happens actually before they ever enter the organization. This is part of the screening process for them anyway. And it sets the tone for what's going to happen when they are wearing your logo inside the company or when they get through that process. And so the idea that, like, I love that you started performance management before this person is even an employee of yours, because it's totally true. You have to start there.
Exactly. You know, and I know I've talked about Southwest a lot because they are such an amazing organization. They're like a social experiment. You know, can we actually run an airline where people are happy and they treat other people well and people, and I know the airline industries are really struggling right now and God help them all. But Southwest Airlines, the way they interview people sends a clear message that if you're going to join here, you better keep acting like this or it's not going to be good for you. So, and I remember the first time I met Southwest Airlines 22 years ago. The first question I had for them is, how do you get consistent performance from people when somebody goes through an interview and they get through and then they show up and they're like a grumpy flight attendant or a gate agent? And what they said is, well, we've already prepped them and it's pretty clear when they don't fit and they usually opt out very early.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how they handle so much of that. Okay, so you've given them their first performance review or expectation review before you hire them. You hire them and onboard them, and that's the next step. Now you go, now that you're here, we're going to tell you all over again that what you heard during the interviews, that's what we're like.
Yeah.
That's what we're like.
I'm reminded of like when my high school English teacher who's teaching me how to write an essay, and she says, in the intro, tell them what you're going to tell them. Then in the body, tell them. And then in the conclusion, tell them what you told them. And it feels like this idea of like the interview process is exactly that. Like, hey, here's what it's going to be like to work here. You're setting the expectation early. And then there's so many things that we talk about that are tied into this, sort of the idea of like repeating yourself and that companies are not good. In fact, we're talking about discipline 4, which is reinforcing the clarity and the culture. Discipline 3 is constantly repeating the, so it's over communicating that. And one of the ways, and I can't remember who I stole this from. Somebody said something interesting and then I can forget who it was, but somebody said, you are what you do consistently. And I like that because it's true. It's whatever you do repeatedly and consistency, that's what's going to be proven out over time. And so the idea that you tell them right in the interview what it's going to be like, then you onboard them, make sure they know that it's real. And then if you're ever at a concluding point of a termination process, it's like, hey, we told you a bunch of times what it was like to work here, what we needed from you. This is now obvious. It's not a heroics thing.
I also want to say that if you didn't do this out the gate, if you didn't hire as you should have, if you didn't onboard the right way, it's not too late. You could still do it.
Exactly. Remember that we talked about plant your tree. The best time to plant a tree is 10 years ago. The second best time is right now.
Yeah,
exactly.
Go sit down with your employees and say, did we, and you might have to sit down with your leadership team to go, have we clarified the behaviors that we expect of people that will make them successful and welcomed here? Have we clarified the attitude we want and their focus? And if you haven't done it, do it now. And it'll be the powerful beginning of real performance management.
Yeah. The idea that we're talking about performance management, and you do have to go back to the source of this, because so many probably pastors in that conference were like, boy, there's so many conversations I need to have. The real source of it is the hiring process. Now there's, once you do that right, you have to sort of stop the spout. Have you actually, there's an analogy. I might butcher this, but there was like,
Give it a shot.
Yeah. I butcher a lot of them, but there was a story I heard one time, this is probably 10 years ago. So this could be, I'm making half of this up, but there's like a insane asylum in a foreign country where the test for when their patients were going to leave is they would, you know, put them over where there's a bucket under a faucet, and they would turn the faucet on and they give them a spoon and say, okay, empty the bucket. And if they turned the faucet off before they started emptying the bucket with the spoon, they're in good shape and they can leave. And I love that analogy because so often we're like, how do we empty this bucket? How do we fire these people? Well, the first thing you got to do is you got to turn off the faucet. If you're constantly bringing in the wrong people into the organization, there's no amount of bailing out that bucket with a spoon that's ever going to get you to the right place.
It's the inputs. Yeah, that's really interesting. I'd never heard that story. That's great. Interesting.
Could be made up. Could have made it up. I have no idea.
Yeah. It works though. It works. So let's say you've done that. You've onboarded them. You're clear about everything. Performance management after that largely comes down to constant reminders and review. And most of it, and I believe this completely, most of performance management is about behavior and attitude, not about outcomes. Now, if there's an easy outcome that can be measured, then that's great. But in most things, and even these pastors and their staffs were like, what should we be measuring in somebody who's supposed to be doing like children's ministry? And it's like, what are you going to interview the children afterward and say, was your instructor engaging? Do you think you got a good, you know, there's no measurement for the most of the jobs in the world, but there's plenty of observational behavioral things that you can talk about. And if you're really clear, you can usually sit down with your employees and go, let's go through the values. Let's go through the mission. And let's talk about what I'm seeing and what you're seeing, and are we on the same page? See, but that requires courage. Mm-hmm. And no HR person or lawyer can design a form to give you courage. You make clarity, you have difficult conversations, and people will usually help you manage them to improve.
Well, honestly, one of my favorite, I always call things that you do bits, but it's not a bit. Like one of the pieces of content that I love that you talk about is when you talk about like, hey, if you know what your behaviors are, you tell people before the interview, and then you constantly, every time you see them violating the behaviors, if you do that constantly, very few people actually get fired in an organization that has that level of clarity and that level of courage. Because here's what happens. You do it, you sit down the first time and you say, hey, you agreed to this before we hired you. You're not following through on these behaviors. We really need you to step up. They're like, okay. You do it the second time, you do it the third time. And by the fifth time, they're like, I don't even want to work here anymore. And they leave on their own. It's the times that you don't actually sit down and repeatedly, every single time you see something violating your culture, if you don't say something, then what happens is you say it the first time, you see it four other times, and you might document it on a form somewhere. And then you don't have the courage or the consistency. Then you actually have to fire people. If you just had the courage to have five of those conversations, it's like, hey, I want you to get better. More often than not, they change or they leave.
Yeah. And as Karen just wrote down for a note for me, she said, and you have to do it in real time. Do it right there. Don't wait till your performance management cycle comes up to tell them, oh, last month I saw these things. Tell them, and by the way, I'm going to add something to that because we're talking about letting people go. And when you see them do it well, tell them that too.
Right.
It's like, of course. Oh, that thing you just did, that's exactly what we want. They're going to be so much more likely to keep doing that. And if you say, oh, that's not the right way to do that, and this is what happened, then they're going to, like you said, either get better or opt out. But if we make it a mystery, they're not going to do that. Here's the example. I love to use this example because I think people can probably relate to this. If you've ever been to church, but you could think of any organization that has somebody at the front desk. Okay. So at a church or a parish, you walk into the front area, either you want to join or you want to get more information or you want to sign up for something. And there's some person sitting there, usually a lady for whatever reason at a church. And they're like, welcome. And if you said to that person, listen, Marge, I don't know why Marge, but you are the front line of this church or this business. You are the first face people see, the first interaction they have. First impressions matter so much. I want you to realize you work at this church, you're a minister, or you work at this company, you're in sales and marketing. You think you're sitting at the front desk, but you are the first impression. And so that's what we consider you to be, and that's what we expect you to be. And here's the values we want you to proclaim, and here's the mission we want to get across. Well, if I do that when I hire her, I do that when she comes on, and I walk by the desk and I say, hey, you did that really well. Hey, that you did it. You frustrated that person again. Hey, you seem kind of grumpy. I think that person wasn't very happy. Marge is going to quit or she's going to change her behavior.
Totally. Mm-hmm.
And then we don't have to worry about calling HR or legal, because we can sit down with Marge and say, hey, Marge, it seems like you're frustrating people. Is this a good job for you? Mm-hmm. And you might even say, by the way, let's take a look at your working genius. And she might go, yeah, I don't know why I'm doing this job.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So again, it's about tell them what you expect of them, catch them doing it well, catch them when they're not doing it well, lovingly tell them what it is. They're going to either auto-correct or opt out. And performance management and letting people go get so much easier.
Well, and I think that so many people that are listening to this are probably like, yeah, I did that. I did that one. You know, I told them that one time. Or there seems to be this like window of time where they, like, it's so interesting that if you hired someone, I bet you're less likely, most people that are not great at this are less likely in the first week to like tell Marge, hey Marge, they're like, oh, it's her first week, she'll learn it. No, that's actually the wrong way to approach it. You should do it as much as possible in the first week so that she doesn't slide into a different rhythm and think it's acceptable. Or they wait, you know, a month and they're like, okay, they've been here a month, I'll have a conversation with them. And then they see the behavior again and again and they think, oh, I've already told them. And it feels, I can imagine being on the other side of that. And it's such a service. That's the weird part about this is Marge actually would love for her manager to take the initiative to say, hey, here's what we want from you as often as possible. But we think we're hurting those people's feelings. And instead, we're actually serving them and helping them succeed.
This is such a critical point, Cody. And I'm so glad you made it. I hadn't thought of this. That first week or that first day, we're going, I don't want to be a hard ass. I don't want them to feel. It's like, no, that's when they need to remember. Think about if you're in a class, the teacher, the things she says or he says in that first day or first week and says, hey, put that phone away. Hey, don't talk to your neighbor. Hey, focus on your assignment. You go, oh, I got some expectations here. I'm going to change my behavior. But when we're like, I don't want to be too tough right away, what we're really saying is, I want them to get the wrong impression. So the first time I have to call them on something, they're going to feel like I'm pulling the rug out from under them.
Yeah.
It just doesn't make any sense. So we think we're trying to be nice, but we're actually prolonging suffering that's going to be coming later.
This point, you said it, and I want to repeat it because I think it's that important. Like, if you do performance management right, I think this is the key because so many people are so worried about, oh, what is that conversation around the firing going to be? No person who is getting fired should ever be surprised. Like that, I think that's the essence of this, right? Like you should have already had enough conversations with them. I remember my wife worked at an organization and she was great at her job. And I, you know, and I'm not saying that as her husband, she had events that were in the top 10 in the nation and got in a little bit of an argument over some moral things that were going on. And her manager put her on an action plan. And they had all the forms and like, hey, here's what you need. Here are the metrics you need to hit. Well, my wife is extremely detail oriented. She went back and pulled all of this evidence that shows I'm doing all the things that you're requesting of me. But I think what I tell that story because the goal is if someone is not the performance management side of this is constantly reminding them to the point where if you are going to have a conversation that is letting someone go, it probably should sound a lot more like, yeah, I knew this was coming and it didn't really work out. And I know you've told me this quite a bit and it's not a surprise to me versus, boy, how do I manage this conversation? Because I didn't have 10 previous ones and now I'm a lot more scared to enter into this, you know?
Yeah, performance management too often, we turn it into something almost adversarial or litigious when it's supposed to be clarifying and supporting.
Mm-hmm.
I think that comes from the guilt that we feel as leaders and managers because we didn't do it effectively, so we double down.
Yes. Yes. And what we should say is, you know something? I don't think I've really ever clarified this stuff for you. That is my bad. Mm-hmm. And though there's some things I'd like you to improve on, I can't even ask you to do that until I make it clear. That's my fault. Let's step back. Let's sign up for the marathon in 2 months. Or 6 months, rather than try to run this marathon right now.
Yeah. You know, Pat, I think I read this quote on LinkedIn that somebody else put out there, but it's a quote that had your name at the end of it. So you can tell me if you said this. I'm pretty sure it was you. But it said, firing someone is the last act of cowardice from a manager who has failed to hold that person accountable. And
I think I said that. Karen is telling me that I said that, so I'm gonna take credit for it.
Pat has said that.
Okay. Which Which I love. You're totally right. If someone if you're unwilling to have those conversations, that's the last act of cowardice, versus the courageous thing to do is to have as many and as often as have those conversations as many times and as often as necessary. And then that last part is not cowardice. It's actually, like our friend Bobby says, making them available to the market.
Right. Bobby Herrera. You know something I want to, so let's say you do all this stuff. And you do, and you blow up performance management by making it's about clarity, it's about reminding, it's about supporting and telling them what they're doing. So there's no surprises. And then you go, oh my gosh, they're just not getting it. They're not leaving, they're not getting better. That's where we have to have the courage to say, now I have to act. And there are sometimes in churches, even they've done all this, they think, oh, I can't let somebody go. This is their job, this is their life. And it's like, no, no, no. Here's why you have to have the courage to do this. One, the productivity in your organization, the way you serve your customers and what you do is going to suffer. You cannot have it not suffer if you have people that aren't performing. And so it's the right thing for your customers and your mission. Secondly, your best people will be the first people to leave if you don't manage out the people that don't belong. If people who do belong are working hard and they're seeing that you're tolerating people that don't, especially if they know they've made it clear to them and they just don't have the courage to say, hey, it's time to go, you're at risk of losing your best people. That's what scares a lot of managers into doing this in a good way. But the last thing, and we always say this, and Matt reminded us that 53 weeks ago, we did a podcast called So You Want to Fire Someone. Remember this, that person is probably suffering because they know they're not doing a good job. And maybe because of their wounds or whatever else, they don't have the courage to leave or look for another job. In those cases, we have to let them go. As Bobby says, make them available to the market, but do it with dignity and help them find someplace where their behavior will be acceptable. And I'll tell a very fast story, which I think is kind of powerful because it was one of the biggest failures I ever made as a manager. Years ago, before we started our company, The Table Group, I had a department and I hired this woman and she was a really hardworking person and she got a lot done and I was way behind and I needed somebody. But the department I had, teamwork was what we were all about. It's like egoless teamwork and all of that. And I was sincere about that. So I hired this woman. She got a ton done, but for whatever reason, she was not a good team player. It was kind of about her. And so, you know, being the great leader that I was, I promoted her. And I literally promoted her. And Karen, I will tell you, Karen, who's sitting here right now, who I was working with at the time, we've only worked together for like 27, 28 years now. Karen said, hey, Pat, if you're going to promote her, then you either need to change the definition about what our values are or rethink how you're managing us. She was very kind about it. And I was like, crap, man, what a knucklehead I am. So I said, I have to be consistent with what I believe. So I tried to manage this person and it just wasn't in her nature. She was not a team player. That's how she was. So I helped her find another job in a different part of the organization, the larger organization that was much better for her. Here's the moral of the story. Once I let her go, and with dignity and everything else, the performance of Karen and the other people in my organization went through the roof. Because when they realized that it was true and clear, they were able to then become the employees they wanted to be. But as long as I was tolerating people that didn't fit, it was really difficult for them to thrive. And that is a great lesson. It's like, oh, other people, because we sometimes think, well, if I let them go, who's going to do that work? And frankly, four people who fit your culture are going to get more done than seven when half the people there don't. So the lesson I learned the hard way. Hey, you know something I want to do right now? Oh, go ahead, Cody.
I was just going to say that as we talked through this whole conversation, one of the thoughts I had is related to this, what we talk about, everything, the underlying plate of all this is the difference between healthy and smart. I wonder if performance is the wrong word in this type of management, because you just described a person who is actually a high performer, and it's really about like the culture of the, so in other words, like when we lay out, hey, here's what a smart organization does, the finance and technology and go to market and all of marketing, all of these things. Then on the other side, we say organizational health and it's minimal politics, minimal confusion. It's about the culture and the people there and the morality and all of that. And I wonder if this is exactly the reason we need to blow it up, because implied in the name is like, hey, you're underperforming. I need you to do more or hit different numbers. When really what you need to be doing is screening for culture almost exclusively. So what you just described is like four people that are aligned around your cultural values are better than seven who are not.
Yeah. So we're going to blow up performance management, Cody. I love what you just said. And we're going to replace it, because you blow something up, you got to replace it with really it's clarity and culture management, which is exactly true. Because when you have that, performance management is actually built into the way you just deal with people.
Yeah,
but when you treat it as a separate, what's that, Trace?
I think it's people management.
Yeah.
Human being management. And sometimes we think it's a process and all those other things. I hope the people listening to this can, I think there's a lot here to implement. There's a lot of things to do. Even in our own organization, I can think we do a lot of this naturally, but there's some very specific things that we can do. You know, I want to shout out somebody. I met a guy 2 days ago. His name is Joe Hoffman. He's the CEO of Timco Rubber in Cleveland. What a great guy. What a great leader. And I got a chance to meet him and he said, hey, Pat, when COVID hit and we had to shut down for a while, and then they were a necessary business, but they do manufacturing and it was really hard. He said, I was listening to the podcast and I was trying to listen to the things you were encouraging us to do. And I had a goal, and that is I didn't want to lay off anyone in the area, not for performance, but because of what was going on. And I wanted to make sure their families were taken care of and that we kept the company going. He said he did it. And his wife was with us. We were talking and she was so proud, and like nobody lost their job during that time. And he's a hero and he listens to our podcast. And he is the kind of person we do this for. And to know that he was able to serve those 30 families at Timco Rubber in Cleveland makes us so proud. So anyway, I just want to shout out to Joe, and I want to thank everyone who's listening, who's doing things on the front lines, managing people, leading them, taking care of organizations, because that's what we need in our society. It matters. All right. Tracy, Cody, Matt, Karen, thanks for being here today. Thanks to all you listeners. We'll look forward to talking to you next time on At the Table. God bless.